This week, the Sedra is Parshas Vayigash, and the story is that Joseph was torturing his brothers with the fear and uncertainty, anxiety, apprehension. He had taken Shimon prisoner, and he had forced them to bring Benjamin down, and he'd set things up in such a way that now Benjamin was going to be prisoner. And Judah approaches Joseph and he says, "Bi Adoni." Over the years we've discussed what this means, "Bi Adoni," in me. Yehuda has the name of God in his own name, plus a Dalet, but the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the name of God, is there inside Yehuda. And so Yehuda is able to connect with the divine inside himself, with the Shekhin inside himself. And so he approaches Yosef with that feeling of the divine light in him. And you know, faith does not mean that where you're uncertain, so you have confidence, and that's faith. You know, in a place where you're not sure of the outcome and you're a little anxious, so you decide to proceed with confidence. That's not the meaning of faith. Emunah, faith, means when you feel the Spirit of God inside you and you feel your own neshama, your own soul resonating, and you feel the light in the darkness, that you yourself are the light in the darkness, and that God is inside you as the you in you. When we get in touch with the faith which is inside us, that's the meaning of emunah, faith. And it has really nothing to do with outcomes. It just has to do with the sense of this is where God is right now. So everything must be okay right now. And with this knowledge that everything is as it is supposed to be right now, this moment, I am going to open myself to the world. That's the meaning of faith. Piyasetzner Rebbe, in Eish Kodesh, the book Sacred Fire that I translated, he talks about feeling this feeling in the Warsaw Ghetto throughout 1940, 1941, up until Chanukah of 1942. And he discusses how without faith, without the feeling of the feeling, without being able to access the divine, the neshama would flee. A person would die if they didn't have emun, if they didn't have faith. The fact that sometimes we can't feel our faith, sometimes we are cut off from it for one reason or another, and then we say, "Oh, I've lost my faith." But what, we haven't lost our faith, because if we had lost our faith, our neshama, our soul would flee our body. What we've lost is the ability to connect to our own faith. And that's very painful. So the Rebbe says, no, it's like anything which it's too important for the well-being of the body to be under the control of a person. For instance, my liver function. You know, I'm not in charge of my liver function. There's a part of my brain that works 24 hours a day that's monitoring my liver function, because if it were left up to me, I'd lose concentration. And, within a few minutes, I'd be flat on my back because, you know, my body didn't produce all the chemicals, you know. And the same thing is with my pulse, you know. I'm not in charge of my pulse, my heartbeat, because if I were, I'd lose concentration, I'd be gone, you know. So it's too important for it to be left up to me. I'm in charge of my fingers and my toes. I can move them here, I can move them there, because my life doesn't really depend on it. So the Rebbe says, you want to feel your pulse? So do some exercises. go running around the block, go up and down the stairs 10 times, you'll feel your pulse, you'll feel your heart, you'll feel your breathing, you'll feel everything. So the same thing is with faith. You don't feel your faith. It's not because it's not there, it's because it's too important for it to be left up to you. If it were left up to you, you'd lose concentration, die. So the faith is something that is innate. It's something inherent in the connection between body and soul. You don't feel? Oh, no. So do some faith exercises. If you do faith exercises, you'll feel your faith. Yehuda, at this moment of total catastrophe, where there was no hope left, and everything had gone and everything was destroyed, he was able, among all the brothers, he was the one who was able to get in touch with his own faith. And of course, this is why Yehuda is the king, and why he is represents Malchus, and why he represents the divine sovereignty of God on earth, because of this ability. Even Cherev Chadamun Echal Tzavorei, even if there's a sharp sword lying on his throat, it's not yet time to give up hope. So Yosef is forced to reveal himself to his brothers, and he can't hold back anymore, and he starts to flow. As we were learning in the past, it's like a divine orgasm. Yosef Layochel his apek, he can't hold himself back anymore. And the Heilige Lublina says, Kidugma, it's like the example is he gives of a man and a woman, that Yosef at that moment is unable to hold back anymore, and he just has to let go. And this is why Yehuda opens his speech by saying, Be Adoni, inside me, and he invites Yosef to engage with him, and in engaging with him, Yosef is not able to hold back anymore because he's been triggered. And so all the abundance that is in Yosef starts to flow. And Yosef explains who they are, and he sends them back to their father. And the Torah tells us that first they came up to Yaakov and they said, Oid Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive, and he's the Moshe B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, he's the ruler over the whole land of Egypt. Vayofag liboy ki lo yehamin lohem, and his heart just wouldn't accept it because he couldn't believe them. Vayedabru Elov is called Divrei Yosef, and they spoke to him, they told him everything that Yosef had told them to say. And he saw the bullocks that Yosef had sent Loseis Oisoi to carry him back to Egypt. And Yaakov's spirit was revived. And Yisrael said, Rav, Oid Yosef b'ni chai. Wow, he says, my son Yosef is still alive. Elcho, I'm going to go. Ve'erenu, I'm going to see him. Beterem omus, before I die. So this last phrase, Vayoyme Yisrael, and Yisrael said, Rav, oid Yosef b'ni chai. The word Rav, which means much or many. How does this belong here in this sentence? If Israel had said Yosef b'ni chai or Oid Yosef b'ni chai, that would have been sufficient. What is the word Rav? So last week we were learning from the Megala Amukos, and this week again we're going to say over Torah from the Megala Amukos. Shlomi used to tell a story. He used to say that this is one of the most fundamental Hasidic stories, and he would preface it by saying, we wouldn't even know about this story if not for the Holy Rishon Rebbe. The story is told by the Bahusha Rebbe, who heard it from his grandfather, which Yosef, who heard it from his father, the Heilige Rishon. And the Rishon Rebbe, of course, he could see what was happening in this world, also in the other world, because this story takes place in the other world. After 120 years, Reb Moshe Leib Sasseve was one of the Talmid of Baal Shem Tov. Reb Moshe Leib Sasseve, he came into the world of truth and he stood before the heavenly court and they examined his life and they said, okay, you go to Gan Eden. So, everybody knows, on the way to Gan Eden, you go quickly, quickly, quickly through the other place, through Gehenna, through hell. So Reb Moshe Leib Sasseve is being hurried by his guides through hell, and he hears the screaming and the shouting and he sees the stuff that's going on, and he stops. And his guide, the tour guide, says, no, move on, keep moving, keep moving. And he says, I'm not moving, I'm taking everybody with me, I'm not leaving here without. So anyways, you can imagine, Shlomi says, you can imagine all the people there in charge. They come to Moshe Leib Sasseve and they say, look, you know, we've got enough trouble here with all the complaints from the inmates here and all the shouting that's going on. It is stressful enough without you now coming in and bothering us, and so keep moving. He says, no, I mean it seriously. I'm not leaving here unless I take everybody with. So cut a long story short, they come, the whole Pamal Yishamala, the whole heavenly court comes down from heaven, and Reb Moshe Leib Sasseve argues in front of the court. He says, Master of the Universe, if you really want me to go to Gan Eden, if you really want me to enjoy heavenly bliss, then I'm telling you now that I can't enjoy heavenly bliss knowing what's going on here. So I'm either you let me take everybody with me and take them to Gan Eden, or I'm not going. So the Rishonim said that there are two endings to the story. There are two versions of the ending to the story. The first version is that it was decided like this, that we're going to look back at Reb Moshe Leib Sasseve's life and see, did he ever in his life have an opportunity to do somebody a favor that he passed by this opportunity? Did he ever once in his life have a chance to do something for somebody that he overlooked, or he didn't take the opportunity? And they looked and they didn't find once in his whole life that he ever passed up an opportunity to do a mensch a toiva, to do a person a favor. So they said, in that case, he has a right to do one more favor, to take everybody out of hell and take them to Ganem. Shlomo added that the Rishonim said, didn't take long, of course, until hell was filled back up. There's another version of the ending of the story, that in fact the heavenly court said, let's go back over Moshe Leib Sasseve's life and let's count how many favors he did for people. As many favors as he did for people, that's how many Yidden he can schlep out from Gehenna. As many favors, toivas, chasodim, as many kindnesses as he did, for each one, he gets to schlep out one person. And they counted over his whole life, and it was exactly the same number of people that he had done a favor. That's how many people were there, and that's how many people he got out of Gehenna, out of hell. And Shlomo used to say, you see, when you do somebody a favor, when you do somebody a toiva in this world, you're not just saving somebody in this world, but you're releasing somebody in the other world who's in trouble. And this is a really fundamental Chassidic story, because it bridges all the worlds, and it bridges all the actions that we do, and it takes even the smallest thing that we do. Sometimes, you know, just smiling at somebody is a toiva, is a favor. Sometimes just a word that you give somebody can be mechaya them, can give them back their life. And it's not just in this world, but it's in the other world also, that you can save somebody from the deepest depth of hell. So somebody showed me, you know, Shlomo has chassidim all over the world. In London there's a very holy chassid who also happens to be Chassidish by birth, and he sent me a Torah from Reb Moshe Leib Sasseve. It's brought down in the Sefer Ilna Dechai. We know Rashi brings that when Yaakov heard that Yosef was gone, when they showed him the coat dipped in blood, Ach Turif Turif Yosef, he says Yosef has been torn, and he refused to be comforted. He refused to be comforted. He said, Ki Ered El Bini Oveil Sha'ilu, I am going down to my son mourning, to the Sha'ol. Sha'ol is the ancient name for hell. So why did Yaakov think that he's going to hell? To the Sha'ol. So Rashi brings the Medrash Agoda. The Medrash Tanchuma says that Yaakov was told by God, if any of your children die in your lifetime, you're going to hell. Rashi brings this. So therefore, Yaakov, who now thinks that Yosef is gone, is dead, he says, I'm going down to my son to Sha'ol. So Reb Moshe Leib Sasseveh says, what on earth made Yaakov think that he was going to hell? All right, so God had said to him, but a person has to have a reason for going to hell. There has to be like some kind of a cause. I mean, what did he do? What kind of a sin did Yaakov think that he had done that for that he was going to be punished with some kind of a Gehenna? So Reb Moshe Leib Sasseveh says that's a misunderstanding of the whole story. He said there are two kinds of tzaddikim. There are two kinds of saints. He says there's a saint who sits at home and he learns, or she learns Torah and does mitzvahs in the house and doesn't go out into the world necessarily looking for people to do favors for. If somebody comes to the house, so you give them everything they need and you help them fix their soul in whatever way that you can help. And this tzaddik is called a boishes ponim. This is a shy tzaddik. And then you have a tzaddik who's called a azas ponim, bold, a bold-faced tzaddik. What kind of tzaddik is this? It's a tzaddik who doesn't sit at home learning Torah or doing mitzvahs or cooking. This is a tzaddik who goes out into the world, on the streets, in the marketplace, and meets people and carries the divine to every dark place. It's a bold person. And that's the Mishnah says, as ponim le Gehenim, a bold, cheeky person goes to Gehenim, goes to hell, and boishes ponim, the shy person, the Gan Eden, goes to Gan Eden. So the Reb Moshe Leib Sasseveh says, you can't understand that Mishnah just the way it's understood. It's not simple. He says, the other world is like this world. The other world has the same shape in the sense of the way you live your life in this world, that's the way you live your life in the other world. So he said, there are some tzaddikim who are boishes ponim, they're shy. So they go to Gan Eden, meaning after 120 years, they go straight to Gan Eden. They don't have to go through Gehenna. They don't have to go through hell. But there are tzaddikim who are azas ponim. These are the bold-faced tzaddikim. So they are the ones that just as then in their lifetime they would go out into the world and they would carry the message and they would schlep people and fix people and help them reconnect. So these same tzaddikim, when they come to the world and they get their reward, first they are led through Gehenna. They're led through hell, and then they're allowed to schlep out whoever they can. So that's the meaning of the Mishnah, as ponim legehenim. So Reb Moshe Leib Sasseveh says that was the Kabbalah that Yaakov was talking about. He said, Yosef Atzadek, Yosef my son, he was the azas ponim, he was the bold-faced tzaddik, and he was the one who was going to go down and schlep everybody out of Gehenna. Now that Yosef is not here, who's going to do the job? I'm going to have to do it myself. And so Reb Moshe Leib Sasseveh reads this Rashi, reads this Agoda, not that Yaakov was going to be punished in some way because, you know, one of his children had died. But since one of his children had died, he was now going to have to be the tzaddik of the Azaz Punim, the bold-faced tzaddik, and would no longer be allowed to live his life as the tzaddik who is boishes ponim. And that's the meaning of Ered Obni Ovel Sha'ola, that I'm going to have to go down to my son to Sha'ol. So we see the connection between the story that Shlomo told, Reb Moshe Leib Salsava, and the actual Torah of the Salsava, of how the Salsava himself was the tzaddik Azus Ponim. The Megala Amukos, he reads it another way. Yaakov, he says, Yaakov was afraid of Gehenna. Of course, those tzaddikim who are boishes ponim, those tzaddikim who are shy, those tzaddikim that prefer to stay at home and not go out, it's because something inside their soul is so fine and so delicate that it just is oppressed and overwhelmed by the coarseness of the world. Some tzaddikim are so fine and so, what can you say, gently bred. Other tzaddikim are just as fine, but they have a way of dealing with the world that they don't get touched by the coarseness of the world. They're the tzaddikim as a ponim, right? And the same thing is with Gehenim. Gehenim smells very bad, and it's very horribly noisy, and it has, you know, in every way, it affects the senses in a negative way. It's really horrible. So the tzaddikim or boishes ponim, they don't have to go through it, and they don't have to suffer. And somehow, the tzaddikim or azus ponim are able to go through it, and it doesn't affect their nostrils, it doesn't affect their ears, it doesn't affect their eyes. That the same tools that they have in this world, that they can be in the world and yet not be assaulted by the things they have to look at, is true in the other world. And Yaakov was afraid of going to Gehenna because this was one of the things that he was not equipped to do. And however, he'd been told that if one of his children dies in his lifetime, he's going to have to go. And you know, the Megala Amukos understands it differently. Or he goes one step further and he says, you know, Yaakov knew that if one of his children dies in his lifetime, he's going to have to go to Gehenna to schlep out that child from Gehenna. That not only would he have to pass through Gehenna to be the schlepper outer, but the soul that he was going to have to schlep out of Gehenna was going to be the child who died. That's how the Megala Amukos reads it. So Yaakov thought he's going to have to go to hell to schlep out Yosef, who was stuck there. So now that he realizes that Yosef is still alive, he says, Rav, oid Yosef ben Chai. The word Rav refers to the world to come. It says more Rav Tuv Asher Tzufanta L'Reyecho. In various places, the sages have said that the word Rav, which means more and more and more without ever being finite, it's never ended. Rav is that which continues to grow. It's like the infinite. That's what he could say. He says Rav Oid Yosef Ben Chai. Now I can go and enjoy the other world, Amuso. Now I can die just one time, and I don't have to like die twice. I can die just one time and go straight to the place that I need to go. Because my son Yosef is alive, and he's the one who can go out. Because that's the whole thing about Yosef, is that think about where he was. He was alone, he was 17 years old. He gets sent down to Egypt, and every kind of pitui, every kind of seduction, every seductive thing was thrown in his path, whether he was in a palace or whether he was in a prison, whether he was in the highest of the highest luxurious place or in the most filthy, dirty, dark place. He was in every kind of of position to lose something of his holiness, and he never did. Like Shlomi used to say, if there's still a Yid who can stay a Yid in Golis, in exile, how do we get this power after being 2,000 years away from the land, away from the Holy Land, 2,000 years away from the Beis Hamikdash, from the temple, so far and so in such distance in terms of time, in terms of culture, in terms of miles, in terms of narrative, the stories that we have is so far away. How come there's still a Yid left in the world? This is because Yosef showed us. Yosef showed us you can be in prison and be a Yid. You can be a Mishneh Lemelech. You can be the second in command to the Pharaoh, and you can still be a Yid. So Yosef is the ultimate Aziz Punim. Yosef is the one who can show his face everywhere and not be attached and not be changed by the world that he's inhabiting. Yaakov is different. Yaakov ishtam Yosef aholim. Yaakov sits in the tent. So on another level, there's something that really is scaring Yaakov Avinu. And there's another reading of Rav Oid Yosef ben Chai here in the Megala Mukis. He says like this: Yosef, we find in Pas Vayeshev, Yosef is referred to as Ben Zukunim, that he's the son of Yaakov's old age. And yet Binyamin is even more the Ben Zakunim, but Yaakov is Yosef is called Ben Zakunim, the child of his old age, and the Targum says Bar Hakim, because in the Talmud, Zikno, old age, is associated with Chochmah, Zekon Chochmah, that when the Torah talks about Zokain and Zikno, old age, it's referring to the acquisition of Chochmah. So Ben Zakunim, when Yosef is called a Ben Zakunim, says the Megala Mukos, what it really means is the reason that Yaakov loves Yosef so much is that when Yaakov looks at Yosef, he remembers all the Torah that he learned from his Zayda Avram Avinu. You know, Avram Avinu and Yitzchak and Yaakov, they learned together until Yaakov Avinu was 15 years old. They learned Torah. But here, now, you know, Yaakov is 100 years old, and he wants to remember, and sometimes, you know, to remember the Torah, it's not just remembering the psak halacha. It's not just remembering the decision. This is how the law. This is what you have to do. This is not how we remember the Torah, right? If you've been learning Torah with Avram Avinu, then in order to remember the Torah, you have to be able to smell the room where you were learning the Torah together with Avraham Avinu. Because learning Torah with Avraham Avinu wasn't just, you know, listen to me while I tell you this. It was a whole body experience. You can imagine being in a room with Yitzchak and Avraham and Yaakov as a boy, sitting there listening to Avraham Avinu tell the secrets of the universe. When Yaakov would learn with his children, he would give over everything that he could remember. But when Yaakov was sitting with Yosef in the room, and Yaakov could look at the face of Yosef, his son, then everything that Avraham Avinu gave over to him everything that he heard, everything that he smelled, everything that he sensed, every nuance, every tune, every phrase that Avraham Avinu gave him, he was able to recall. That was the reason that Yaakov was so kshura benafshoi with Yosef. That's why the soul of Yaakov was connected so powerfully to Yosef. Because ben zekunim, because Yosef was the child who gave his father chokhmah. What is it like to have such a son that when you look at him, your own Zayda, your own grandfather's face is there in front of your eyes? And the reason is because Yosef is the Midas Yesod. Yosef is the sphere of Yesod, and Yesod is about Zikoron, memory. You know, masculinity in Hebrew is Zachrus, Zachar. Masculine, male, the Hebrew is Zayin Ches Resh, which also means to remember. To remember, Yosef was memory. That's the meaning for Yosef, of him being Midas Yesod. That to be in the state of holiness that is Yosef means that there is no forgetting. You see, Yaakov Avinu knows that his face is carved on the Kiseh HaGavod, on the throne of glory. But you know, one of the worst sins is to forget the Torah that you've been taught. The Mishnah in Ovi says, anybody who forgets his Torah forgets one thing of his Torah is mischayev benafshei. His mamish, that person who lets go something of the Torah that he's learned, something of his soul dies. So we say in the davening of Rosh Hashanah, ve'ein shikcha lifnei chisei chavodecho, before your throne of glory there's no forgetting. So we say that on Rosh Hashanah Musaf in the section called Zichronos, memories. There's no forgetting in front of the throne of glory. But Yaakov knew that he had forgotten a lot of things. And in fact, you know, the previous Torah that we were saying, that Yaakov knew that he has to go down and schlep his son out of Gehenna, is one thing. But how did Yaakov think that he had done anything to deserve going down to such a place? And this is the answer, because Yaakov said, you know what, I can't remember anymore some of the things that I learned from my Zaydan. Now he hears Yosef ben Ichai. He says, Rav, oid Yosef ben Ichai. He says, now my Rebbe is alive again. Because now I'm going to go down to Mitzrayim, I'm going to go down to Egypt, I'm going to see Erenu, I'm going to see Yosef's face, and everything is going to come back to me. There's going to be no forgetting. I'm going to remember everything. Everything that I heard from my Zayda. So he says, Rav, oid Yosef ben Ichai, my Rebbe, my Rav. There's a Medrash. The Medrash says that when Yosef said to his brothers, Alu l'sholem el avichem, go up in peace to your father, Yotzeso bas koil, a voice came out from heaven and said, Sholem Rav l'oihavei soirusecho. Peace, ever-growing peace to those who love your Torah. What's the connection? So the Megal Amukai says that Yosef sending his brothers Alu l'sholoim, Yosef was invoking his mid of Yisod, which is the ability to make peace, because that's that the Midah Yesod, the Sefira of Yesod, is, even though it's associated with sexuality, but really it's associated with connections. Because the mouth, the tongue, the words that we say, they are just as important in the terms of connection. And that's why we were learning that the bris of the covenant between the ten toes corresponds to the bris between the ten fingers, so that the tongue in the mouth also is called a mila. And when Yosef, when they wouldn't believe him that he was Yosef, it says he showed them the mila, kizeh ha-peh ha-medabai lechem, meaning that he showed them that his mouth, he hadn't corrupted his mouth by saying bad things, and really he had never said bad things. And now when he sends him back to their father, alu l'sholoim, this was the fulfillment of his father who had told him to go to see the shalom of his brothers. And this was the fulfillment of that command. He says, go back to father and tell him that I've seen to the peace of my brothers. And in saying that, he fixed everything. They realized they had never been in danger, they had never been in pain, that everything that they, even their suffering, had been imaginary. All those years that they had thought they'd sinned and they'd spoiled things and broken things, it never happened. At that moment, a voice comes out from heaven and says, Shalom Rav Lo'oyhavei Soyrusecho. The Megal Amukis says, Oyhavei Soyrusecho, Yaakov is the one who loves the Torah. He's known as the lover. Because God says, Oyhav is Yaakov, I love Yaakov. Shalom Rav, this is the eternal peace, or the infinite peace, the ever-expanding peace. And this is when Yaakov hears that Yosef is really alive, he says, Rav Oyd Yosef Benichai. This is the Rav that Yaakov refers to when he meets Esav and he says, Yesh li Rav. Meaning, it's never everything. I don't want everything. It's not about having everything. It's about that the things that I have gone forever. The Medrash says, Rashi brings, that Yosef sent his father eglois, calves, bullocks. And the reason he sent it him, because he said, if my father doesn't believe that I'm still alive, this will be a siman, because when I left my father all those years ago, he was learning with me the parsha of Egla Rufa. Egla Rufa is what happens in the land of Israel in ancient times. If you find a dead body somewhere out in a field or on a road far from a town or a village or a city, and you don't know where it came from, you don't know who the dead person is, obviously something foul has happened, and all the elders of the town have to come out and they have to wash their hands and say, you know, Yodeinu lo shafcho zadam, our hands did not spill this blood, we didn't see it happen. And the Gemara says that means that they have to go over their own lives, and they say, how come this man who was in our town, how come we let him go without taking care of him? What happened to him after he left us? Did we let him walk out of town without accompanying him? Did nobody walk with him? Did we just ignore him? Did we not give him the things that he needs? That was the parsha that Yaakov was learning with Yosef. And so one of the rituals, the main ritual would be Egla Rufa. They would take this calf and they would break its neck. And that place where the dead body was found, that place would become like a taboo place. And the farmer wasn't allowed to use it as a field. He wasn't allowed to build there or use it for agriculture until whoever had committed this horrible act of murder was found. This was the parsha, this was the subject that Yaakov was teaching Yosef. So he sends him this calf, and he says, I remember what you were learning with me. It's interesting that you could say that Yaakov himself, all these years, was asking himself, you know, maybe I should have gone with Yosef when I sent him to his brothers. Maybe I should have accompanied Yosef. Maybe there was something that I didn't do. And so all these years, Yaakov was going over and over and over in his mind this very last thing that he'd been learning with Yosef. And Yosef himself was asking himself, you know, how come this was the exact thing that my father was learning with me, and this is almost what happened to me? I was set on, and they tried to kill me, or they were going to kill me, and then, you know, so there is a symmetry here. The Gemara says, and it's a psikta, it's an early Medrash, the Medrash says that when Moshe came up to heaven, he heard God saying, Eliezer Beni says, Egle bas shnosa, Egle bas shnosai, that God was learning the halacha that the Egle Arufo has to be 1 year old, and the red heifer has to be 2 years old. And he was saying it in the name of Eliezer. Eliezer, my son, says that Egla is 1 year old and the Paraduma is 2 years old. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, Rabbeinu Shalom, what is going on here? Who is this person, Eliezer? And he begged, he says, Yehi Rotzoi, may it be your will that this Eliezer, who turns out to be Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, the great Eliezer of the Mishnah, the Rebbe of Rabbi Kiva, that this, he says, he should be one of those who comes out of my loins. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu wants to be an ancestor. For some reason that I don't understand, there's something very profound, very deep in this Egla Arufo, in this story of the calf that they kill by breaking its neck, as an atonement or something associated with a death that happens in this shocking way that remains a mystery, that there's an unsolved mystery, and the unsolved mystery can only be mitigated with the death of this calf, and this calf has to be 1 year old according to Rebbe Eliezer. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher, wants this Eliezer to be he wants to be connected to this Eliezer. And in fact, the Gemara says that when it's talking about Moshe's sons, that Yisrael and Tzipporah bring the Shem Ha'echad Eliezer, and the name of the one was Eliezer, and they say this is the Eliezer who later is the Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. I want to say that maybe here in this story of the separation of Yaakov and Yosef in the Egla Arufo, there's something about something that we were talking of last week, that there's something of the mystery of the Shechina that gets trapped in an unresolved way. Something happens, and a murder happens, and there's no witnesses, and then the person, you know, their body then claims that empty space, and it remains forever empty, and something of the blood that's spilled there in the soil has to remain. You know, there's something in the story of Egla Arufo and Rebbe Eliezer, who says Egla Bas Shona, that it has to be a 1 year old and no older, and God saying halacha, what do you want from me? He says, always the halacha is like Eliezer, my son. That this is a Moshe, and then this one added ingredient that Moshe was desperately hoping that he could somehow connect with this Eliezer, that this Eliezer be somehow a descendant of his. That in here is this mystery of the Shekhinah that we talked about last week, that doesn't want to go back into the land, and that wants to remain with Moshe outside Bagay Mulbeis Pa'or, to be buried outside Israel, never to go back into the land until Bias Goel Tzedek, until Mashiach comes b'mehera b'yomenu. Thank you.